Sound Opinions is supported by Goose Island Beer Company, which brews beers that are highly rated by beer critics and beer lovers alike. More at gooseisland.com. We don't need to be the only beer you drink. We just want to be the best beer you drink.
This is Sound Opinions, and later on, you're going to be hearing some musical buried treasures. But right now, that is the inimitable James Brown with one Clyde Stubblefield on drums. Clyde Stubblefield died February 19th at age 73 in Madison, Wisconsin, of kidney failure. The original funky drummer, Jim, as you well know, Clyde Stubblefield. He was an architect of funk. He was an architect of hip-hop.
Yep.
We're going to get to that in a second. He was born in Alabama in 1943, eventually moved to Macon, Georgia, because he was much in demand. By the time he was in his teens, already an in-demand drummer on the R&B and jazz circuit, started playing with Otis Redding. James Brown, you know, tapped him on the forehead and said, "I want you in my band." And to James Brown's...
A mixed blessing.
Yeah. James Brown had already had a tremendous amount of success as a soul singer. But with Clyde Stubblefield in his band, as well as John Jabo Starks, also on drums, he completely reconfigured his sound starting in the mid-60s. And it started with that drummer. The idea of funk, of rhythmic-based music, became a reality under that band, under James Brown, but specifically because of the drumming of Starks and Stubblefield. Stubblefield was the guy who had the more free approach to the drumming. Starks was more of a straight-up R&B-style drummer. Clyde had these elements of jazz in the way he would accent beats, his fills, his little staccato beats. There was always a little extra touch the way Stubblefield approached the funk.
Grace notes, we drummers call it, Greg.
Exactly. You know, we had R.J. Smith on the show a few years ago talking about the great James Brown. He was always talking about this concept of on the one.
Yeah.
You know, the way Brown reinvented the rhythmic feel of black music. And it really started with Clyde Stubblefield. He was the guy that he built these songs around. You know, when you think about funk, you think about a song like Cold Sweat in 1967, which basically, you know, said chord changes, who needs stinking chord changes?
Melody, not so much.
But, you know, and a lot of people thought, oh, it's reductive. No, what James Brown was tapping into was the source, the original source of African-American music, was music from Africa. Very rhythm-based, very polyrhythmic-based, but he used only two drummers to achieve that sound, Stubblefield and Starks. And every other instrument in the band, keyboards, guitars, horns, even James Brown's voice became a percussion instrument.
A rhythmic. Well, you know, what's fascinating is that African roots of those rhythms, Greg, but combined with Stubblefield talked in interviews about growing up in Chattanooga, Tennessee, and there was a factory nearby, and it was the sound of the factory, as he put it, pop, boom, machinery always going, that also informed his rhythmic thinking.
Here's a little bit of Clyde Stubblefield on James Brown's immortal Cold Sweat, in which he says, you know, give the drummer some.
Go and play with him.
Greg, please stop dancing around the studio. I know it's hard when we're listening to Cold Sweat, or really any of the tracks that Clyde Stubblefield played with the mighty James Brown. I think as part of paying tribute to Clyde Stubblefield, we should indulge in a sample platter segment. This is the segment we've introduced recently, where we look at an original song and then the new directions it's been taken via the art of sampling. And I do not think it's an exaggeration to say no song in hip-hop history has been sampled more than funky drummer Clyde Stubblefield playing with James Brown.
1, 2, 3, 4, get it!
Although it was not a song he liked. Back in 2014, he said, I didn't really like it. I couldn't really get off on it. There was also some aggravation that he had never been paid. Despite this song being sampled, and no exaggeration to say literally hundreds of times, he told the New York Times in 2011, "All my life I've been wondering about my money." In later life, we should mention he was a colleague of ours on public radio. He was the house drummer for What Do You Know out of Wisconsin. So he didn't have a lot of money. He had to have surgery in 2000 when he had bladder cancer. It cost $90,000, and only last year after the death of Prince did Clyde say, Prince stepped forward and paid his entire hospital bill, and they'd never even met. Prince, however, is one of the many who sampled Stubblefield's funky drummer riff. You know, you hear the drums powering Get Off by Prince and My Name is Prince. You also hear Stubblefield's drumming powering Public Enemies, two of their best songs, Bring the Noise and Fight the Power. Sinead O'Connor, completely different realm.
Yeah.
I Am Stretched on Your Grave. George Michael's Freedom 90. Fine Young Cannibals, I'm Not the Man I Used to Be. Nine Inch Nails, Peggy. Nine Inch Nails is sampling Clyde Stubblefield. Mama Said Knock You Out by LL Cool J. Crisscross Jump, original Gangster Ice-T. Justify My Love by Madonna. If I had to say, as a drummer, as a music critic, as a James Brown and Clyde Stubblefield fan, what is it? It's not only the fact that late in the song, funky drummer, somewhere around the 6-minute mark of a 7-minute song, you get a drum break. You know, the rest of the band drops out and you just hear Stubblefield drumming. And throughout the entire song, it is his drum pattern that has powered the song, really given it its structure, you know, and Brown is egging him on, you know. But it was a nice, clear stretch of a couple of bars to sample. But I also just think it's the ineffable feel of Clyde Stubblefield. Now, the guy was not a flashy drummer. He did have a way of accenting the clock, we would call it, these little grace notes. You know, Questlove, I think a drummer who took a lot from him, said, you know, they've been faster, they've been stronger, but Clyde had a marksman's left hand, unlike any drummer in the 20th century. I think that's what you kind of have to be a drummer. It's that combination of the power of the one and the three, or the two and the four, on the snare drum, and also what the left hand was doing to decorate the clock in a very jazz way. So here's Funky Drummer, and then what it became when it was sampled.
Needing, waiting for you to just
Those are just a few of the many, many uses in hip-hop and pop music of Clyde Stubblefield's fantastic drumming on Funky Drummer by James Brown. Clyde Stubblefield, a true original, dead at the age of 73. One, two, three, four!
Every few months on Sound Opinions, we like to talk about what we call buried treasures,
yes.
Jim. And that's basically a bunch of records we really love that we didn't get a chance to talk about on the show. We get flooded with stuff that we like quite a bit, and there's not always room to talk about it every week. And what I think distinguishes these records in particular is that most people haven't heard about them either. It's not like they're
right.
big mainstream records or records that have been written about extensively. We both feel that these are under-the-radar records, that these are records that not many people may have noticed when they first came out, but they deserve much wider attention.
Mm-hmm.
I'm going to start with a group out of New York City called Public Access TV. And this is really the story of the band's co-founder, singer, guitarist, and main songwriter, John Etherly. Here's a classic tale. Small town boy grows up with big city dreams, moves from the smallest town imaginable, and ends up in one of the biggest cities imaginable, and starts a band.
Mm.
John Etherly, that's the story of John. His family moved from Texas to Tennessee. His father was an aspiring Nashville songwriter who never quite made it. Meanwhile, John and his family, they're living in this little quiet town of about 2,000 outside of Nashville. And John took some lessons from his father in terms of just, you know, seeing what a songwriter does, playing multiple instruments. His father really never made it. He died never making it as that Nashville songwriter that he aspired to be. Mm. But that didn't stop John from having these dreams of one day forming a rock band in New York City. He dropped out of high school and eventually moved to New York, where he brought a couple of his boyhood friends along with him, started a band in the city, and their debut album came out last year. It's called Never Enough. The debut album is classic power pop. If this had come out in the late 70s, early 80s, it might have been compared to bands like Shoes or the early Cheap Trick. It reminds me a lot of those classic Midwestern power pop bands of that era. Really, all offshoots of that first or second Big Star album, take your pick. You know, that sound of sort of chiming, super melodic, well-structured songs with sort of a little bit of a soul and R&B edge. That's what you're getting from Public Access TV. Here's a cut from the first album from Public Access TV. It's called In Love and Alone on Sound Opinions. Love and Alone from the debut album by a New York City band called Public Access TV, Never Enough. Jim, what do you got next?
Greg, I'm going to L.A. For another debut album. It is called, with the exclamation mark, Feel Your Feelings, Fool, by a young band called The Regrets, R-E-G-R-E-T-T-E-S, okay? If that sounds like an odd sort of name evocative of early 60s girl groups, a wiser scribe than I had described them as Bikini Kill meets the Ronettes. and that's actually, I can't do better than that. It's pretty fantastic. A garage band led, when I said young, I wasn't kidding, by 15-year-old Lydia Knight and some of her high school buddies. 15 years old, and they just got signed to Warner Brothers. Unheard of in this era. I first had my curiosity piqued about them when our pal Todd Martins at the LA Times wrote a long profile about this crazy, successful, brilliant group of high school age musicians. What are they doing? That there's a sort of a third wave feminist, millennial feminist take, aggressively so, but really smart and really funny. I've got pimples on my face and grease in my hair, prickly legs. Go ahead and stare. Lydia is singing on a song called A Living Human Girl. She is taking on sexism in high school, sexism in society, and having a lot of fun while doing it. The melodies are indelible. The rhythms are driving. I just can't imagine the future of rock and roll being in better hands than these. If we had 100 bands like this, we would rule the world. Here's The Regrets with a song called Juice Box Baby, the debut album, I just love saying this, Feel Your Feelings Fool on Sound Opinions. Box Baby by The Regrets. Don't you love that, Greg? I'm a big fan. After a break, you and I are going to dig up some more buried treasures. And later in the show, we'll reveal a brand new segment about a song that got a musician into music. We're calling this Hooked on Sonics. That's all coming up on Sound Opinions from WBEZ Chicago and PRX. They say the kids don't like rapping.